Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the podcast that's not too interesting, it's not boring, it's just interesting enough. And joining me today, Alex, is, as always, our resident guests, no, co-hosts, Martin and Robin. How are you?
We'll roll with it.
You are my weekly guests that I just have on my podcast every single week.
It's true. Yeah.
How are you both? How are you, Robin?
Oh, I'm well, thank you. Happy to be here talking to you guys. How are you both?
Good. Well, I'm fine.
Good. Another week in lockdown. Which has been okay. It's been snowing here, hasn't it, in the UK? There's still snow on the ground because it's frozen over. So there's
bitterly
just
cold.
Shards and shards of ice. But it doesn't matter because I'm not going anywhere.
I know. It's great, isn't it?
So yeah. So that's it.
I was in a queue at Tesco earlier to get in, and I gave up. It was too cold. The line was too long.
Really?
I was like, no, not having this.
Yeah.
So now you're at home, just cold and starving.
Exactly, yeah. Had a nice dinner plan tomorrow.
Not anymore.
Plans have been ruined. But other than that, I'm fine.
Great.
So today, what are we going to be discussing? Well, I'll tell you. We're going to be talking about some of the things that we learned this week, as always. And we wanted to discuss Dyatlov Pass.
Ooh.
It's one of the greatest mysteries of the 20th century.
So good. Favorite.
And it's one that we've discussed before. I think you discussed it, Martin, on the podcast that shall not be named.
Mm-hmm, yes, previous podcast. Mm.
But since then, there's been a bit of an update. And we may have cracked it. Not us, personally, obviously.
Us personally, yeah.
But scientists,
we'll take credit. Thank you.
More important people than us have possibly cracked the mystery. So we'll be talking about that in a little bit. And as always, I'll be hosting the weekly quiz. We're all drawing at the moment, aren't we?
We are.
So it's a battle for taking the lead in Series 3 of the podcast.
Blimey.
Who will it be? No pressure at all. But before we get into any of that, well, actually, before we start, I just wanted to say, go and check out Robin's video on the channel. Came out a couple of days ago, and it is amazing. Really well done there, Robin.
Thank you.
So if you haven't seen that, click away from this, then come back.
Open a new tab.
We'll put a card up above and go and watch it. With that all said and done, shall we find out what we've learned this week? Martin, what have you learned this week?
Well, I've learned about countries that have lots and lots of islands. So the UK has a few, doesn't it?
It has a few different islands.
And then you think of countries that have lots of islands, like Indonesia is one that comes to mind. A country made up of islands, really.
Oh, that's cool.
Now, Indonesia has 17,504 islands.
Whoa.
Which is a number of islands. The Philippines has 7,641, so slightly less.
Okay.
Canada has 52,455 islands.
Wow.
Which is a heck load of islands. But I was learning about, you know, I was looking up which countries in the world have the most islands. And I was kind of surprised by number one. I was just wondering if what you think could be number one, given the countries I've mentioned.
Antarctica.
Not Antarctica. This is like the quiz come early, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Alex, do you want to guess?
The most amount of islands.
Yeah.
I don't know. United States.
It's not the United States, although it is fifth on the list with 18,617. No, the number one is Sweden. Sweden, yes. You look at the map of Sweden, you see all the different islands.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. But what is crazy to me is the sheer number of islands Sweden has.
Yeah.
267,570 islands.
Wow.
It's made up of. Which I just thought was mind-blowing. And on the top three are all Nordic countries. So Norway, 239,000, and Finland with 179,000.
It's a lot of islands.
How much do they go for? Can we buy one?
Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking. And then my next thing was to look up the population of Sweden, which is around 10 million people.
Yeah, what that'd be.
So one in 40 people. That's an island for one in 40 people.
That's great.
So
nice.
So yeah, if you want to buy an island, Sweden, maybe, just maybe, is the place to go, because apparently only around, I think it's between 1,000 and 2,000 of the islands are actually inhabited by people and used. So there's plenty of islands to go around if you want. So Sweden is the place to go.
But I mean, double check the definition of island before you go and buy any, because you might be duped into buying a 4-foot square.
Exactly. Yeah, the parameters of what these islands consist of isn't exactly laid out in this particular article. But it seems like, yeah, they can't just be like a bit of a rock. They've got to be a natural island. So that's what I've learned this week. Sweden is your island.
That's amazing.
I feel like when people fantasize though about owning their own islands, they don't really fantasize about owning like a big snowy patch of rock just off of Sweden.
Do they not?
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe not. Maybe not.
Maybe if you want an evil base, to make an evil layer on there, that might be a good location.
That's true. Did you guys, on a slightly different note, did you guys see the program with Bear Grylls? And it was people, I think it might have even been called The Island, and people saw surviving the island or something. People have to.
Remember that being a thing. Yeah.
They're dumped on an island and they have to survive. And even though often they're in these tropical places, of course there's no infrastructure. There's nothing set up for them. They don't have anything on them except for a little bit of water, so you don't have participants dying straight away. And it's horrible. The whole process just seems horrible. So this idea of the tropical island, you don't want to just buy an island. You've got to have the infrastructure. You've got to have, your mansion on there. You've got to have Thunderbird. Was it Thunderbird 1?
Yeah.
Tracy Island.
Well, the whole fleet, yeah. You want Tracy Island.
Exactly.
Well, where are you going to get your shopping from? It doesn't work.
This
is
it. Doesn't work. This is it. Yeah. Exactly.
No one thinks about
Sweden.
That.
It's a nice idea. Poorly realised. Don't do it. Don't buy your own island. It's a waste of money.
Deliveroo does not come round to that island.
No,
exactly.
Although once they get drones, they might be more
that's true.
Compelled to.
It's true. Well, thank you, Martin. Robin, what have you brought to the table this week?
I don't know if I can top Martin's fact. That was fascinating. I was just learning this week about biocodecology.
What?
That's my new word, which is... studying manuscripts on a molecular level.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, so analyzing the materials of old books by looking at the molecules and the DNA and stuff like that. Ooh. And this is actually more useful than you might think, because they're able to analyze the DNA, the microbes, and the proteins of old manuscripts, which, as you may know, in Europe at least, were often made of animal skin. So there's all kinds of nerdy academic things that you can learn through this process. You can establish exactly which type of animal was used to make the pages of a book. For instance, there's the Gospels of St. Luke, which is a 12th century manuscript, so from the 1100s, really well preserved, and it's held in York Minster Cathedral in Britain. And it's got a leather cover and loads of parchment pages made from animal skin. And they used to think it was just made from a calf. But they've now analysed it and found out that the pages are a mixture of sheep, calf, and goat skin. And the cover is made from a deer.
Whoa.
And the deer is from Northern Europe. Ah. Even though the book is in the North.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Interesting.
But more than that, they found that 20% of all the DNA that they found in this book was human DNA.
Mm.
And it was especially prominent on pages which had oaths written on them. Because back in medieval times, when you made an oath, you'd probably kiss the book.
Or
put your hand on it while you swore it. So they think they've got DNA evidence showing how this book was used.
20%?
20% of the DNA.
That seems incredibly high, yeah.
Yeah, very high.
That seems grubby. It seems grubby, to say the
least.
Yeah,
it's kind of nasty. Grubby. Yeah. Mm. But yeah, medieval times, they're probably much hardier people, I imagine. If we were time travel back to medieval times, we'd die within a few days from some unknown disease.
What kind of DNA are we talking about? This
saliva, I think.
Just drooling over the books.
And maybe some skin molecules. Hopefully no bodily fluids other than saliva.
You'd hope not, wouldn't you? You'd hope not.
Mm.
That's the funny thing. Onto your point with that we would have died in medieval times. You get these anti-vaxxers, don't you, who are like, we survived for thousands and thousands of years before. No, we didn't. No, we didn't. People just died. You fundamentally do not understand. People did just die before these vaccines.
It's like, it's like people like, oh, when I was a kid, we just would not wear bicycle helmets and we'd be thrown all over the place, be thrown downstairs, hit on the head and stuff. And we were fine. It's like, well, many of you weren't. You were.
Yeah, my parents beat me and I've turned out fine. No, you're not. You're following Britain First on Facebook.
You're shouting at tea. What was that one that happened last year? Someone was having a go at PG tips or something.
Oh, I don't know.
I can't remember.
Mad world.
Who knows? What did you learn this year, Alex?
Well, I don't think I've learned anything as interesting as either of you. But I learned something about Lily Allen this week.
Oh,
you know, the pop singer Lily Allen?
Yeah. Yeah.
I learned that she was, years and years ago, once offered hundreds of thousands of bitcoins to play a gig on Second Life. You know, the game Second Life?
Yes. Yeah.
And understandably at the time, I'm not saying like, oh, she was an idiot for turning it down or whatever.
Yeah. No, of course
they
not.
They were worthless. But she turned it down. And if she had agreed to it and sold that Bitcoin when it reached its peak this week of $48,000 they were worth.
Yeah.
So she doesn't actually specify how many she was offered, but she says hundreds of thousands. So that's presumably crazy. At the minimum, it's 200,000. Yeah. If she was offered 200,000 Bitcoin
at that,
she would have got $9.6 billion for one concert on Second Life.
Oh, man. Oh, Alex, I'm not nowhere near as dramatic, but I saw a post earlier on. It was a screenshot from a tournament. I think it was a StarCraft tournament back from 2010.
Mm. Yeah.
And first prize was $500. Second prize was $250. Third was $150. Fourth was $100. And then positions 5 to 8... were, I think it was 100 bitcoins each? I think it was. 100 wow. bitcoins each.
That's amazing.
Which, of course, back then would be worth like 50 quid total.
But now
you're looking at millions, yeah.
Yeah, 100 bitcoin each, so that would be, 5 million, just roughly.
Here's what I don't get, though. Is anybody actually buying bitcoin right now? That's what I don't get, because when it...
Elon Musk did, yeah.
I suppose he's a billionaire, isn't he? He's got cash to burn. Okay, well, that answers my question.
I think some people will. Some people obviously are, otherwise the price would be dropping, wouldn't it? Mm.
Yes, well, that's what I don't get. Like when you've got something that has peaked and crashed so many times in the past decade, and it's peaking at its highest peak yet, why would you buy now?
That's the thing, don't you? You have people following the trend, don't you? Following the herd, seeing in the news that it's rising and just thinking that will continue. I guess it has done, hasn't it, in a way?
But it seems like the idea is it's like supposed to be a digital currency, and currencies are supposed to be like relatively stable.
Yes.
But it seems like people are just using it to because they might make some money if they invest now and sell it later.
Yeah. It doesn't it's a commodity really seem not a currency like, anymore.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, I mean, I just thought I'd point that out. But also, what I found interesting about this is not like, oh, what? I bet she's kicking herself for that. But if she had said yes, has anyone been paid more per hour in history than she had accepted that? For what? Like 3 hours work? Three or four hours work? She could have got $9.6 billion at the minimum?
It does. It makes you wonder, doesn't it? If those... I mean, in relation to your question, no. I imagine that wouldn't be the case unless someone else had been paid in Bitcoin. But that company that paid her or was offering to pay her on Second Life...
Mm.
I wonder if they kept any Bitcoin. Surely they did.
I hope they did. If they didn't pay her, that's how
I mean,
they
imagine that, yeah. If they actually had that amount of Bitcoin to burn, I wonder where they are now. That's a good question.
Mm. You gave 200,000 Bitcoin to Danny Dyer when Lily Allen turned us down. You madman.
Yeah, but that's what I learned this week. Shall we move on to some of our favourite comments of the last week? So I've got a comment this week that I want to bring up. This was on our last podcast, commented by Beth Shep 1998, who says, "I can't believe the Hanforth Parish Council meeting didn't come up." Now, I know that this is something that we've all seen, because just before the podcast started, we've been quoting it nonstop. What an amazing video. Where did this come from? This is exactly what I needed in 2021.
Yeah, I think a mixture of the Hanforth Parish Council, for those who don't know, is a local parish council meeting on via Zoom or Skype or whatever that turns into an absolute shit show and everyone shouting at each other and people getting kicked off the calls and people screaming, and it's fantastic.
Absolutely.
That and the lawyer who turned into a cat. Just... You can get the filter off. Between those two, this week's been okay for videos.
For Zoom videos, yeah.
It's been a while since we had a viral video that was that enlightening.
Yeah. If you haven't seen the Hanforth Parish Council one, it's just the most English like older generations using technology kind of video imaginable. It's great. Who's your favourite character in there? I think mine is Gollum, as I call him. Alad's iPad.
Yeah, there's a weird Gollum mask.
The guy starts shouting, snapping.
Yeah, the really aggressive charge. Guy. I like John Smith in that video. He just laughs a lot. He just cuts back to him. He's always laughing about something. He's good.
John Smith's good, yeah.
I reckon Alad's iPad, but the other man sitting next to him who keeps on telling him to not kick off. Don't. Yeah, I like him.
That's good, yeah.
Here comes a subpoena.
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 I'm just in a meeting at the moment.
All right, Julie.
Anyway, this is
as much
preview.
As it's wonderful for us to talk about.
Yeah,
it.
I think we can talk about this, but yeah. This is most of our listeners probably haven't seen this thing, but we encourage you to look it up.
But just before the podcast started, this is all we were doing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just wanted to raise that because you said Beth Shep. I can't believe it didn't come up. We didn't have time to mention it then, but yeah, I wanted to raise it this time just to make people aware of it. And I feel like it could be a buzzer at some point down the line.
We could have talked about the Trump impeachment, but you know, we'll talk about this instead.
It's way more important.
Way more interesting.
Very true. Well, I've got a comment from The Moth. Great name. And The Moth says, this is in relation to our AI video, so last week's. And The Moth says, people are just scared AI might realize how destructive humans are and may calculate pro and cons of having people around. Kind of like mountain climbers who need to decide whether to cut the rope with their partner. Decision made based on logic. And I think this is a real fear, isn't it? What we were talking about last week, the fear that they, you know, they have a level of understanding based on logic, and it bypasses human safeguards that are being put in place and decides to cut us off, as you say, like a climber on the rope who would ultimately lead to their demise too, unless they get rid of us. So a kind of a survival of the fittest with AI realizing that actually they would progress better if it weren't for humans. So yeah, good comment.
Was it an interesting kind of perspective, like,
like evolution as well, like the dominant form always eradicates the previous iteration. Well, not like, you know, eradicates, but...
Yeah. Same way that Neanderthals
dominates and takes over,
kind of got bred into and then slowly died out.
Yeah,
over Homo sapiens. Is that what we are? I don't know.
We are. There we go. Yes.
Prehistory, not my thing.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's a great perspective. And we're talking about, there were so many great responses to our last podcast about artificial intelligence being unstoppable if it ever gains, what was it, superintelligence, singularity or whatever. Yeah, there's so many great comments, and that was just one of them. But my comment, also from that same podcast, nothing to do with AI, it's from Lady Carolyn, or Caroline, who says, I am hashtag Team Alex, so hulk out in the next quiz and show them who's boss. Positivity be damned, lol. That is, of course, in reference to Alex's New Year's resolution to be more positive, but also his deep frustration in the quiz when things start turning against him.
Yeah, well, luckily, Alex, you're not in the quiz this week, are you? You're the quiz master.
I am. I'm the quiz master, and... I'm not going to put up with anything this week. I'm going to be ruling over the quiz with an iron fist, but in a positive way.
In a positive,
in a positive way. I'm just going to be like, you're losing a point.
You're shit.
Your doctor
you're
point.
Shit.
Exactly.
Go home. Go home. You are home. Okay.
Can you guarantee, Alex, that we won't be kicked out this time?
Well, you know, counsellor, if assuming everyone behaves, no one will be put into the waiting room.
Okay, good.
Oh my gosh.
Oh dear.
Okay, well, thank you for all your comments, and keep them coming in. We love reading through them and reading them out each week. But shall we move on to our main topic of discussion this week, which is, have they finally solved the mystery of Dyatlov Pass?
I always say Dyatlov Pass in a northern accent. I'm always like, Dyatlov Pass.
Dyatlov Pass.
It's just, Dyatlov it Pass. Just comes naturally. Dyatlov Pass. But have they solved it? Good question.
That is the question. Shall I just jump straight into it? Shall I go into a bit of backstory about the mystery itself?
I think that would be wise. Bit of background, yeah.
Okay, cool. So the story of Dyatlov Pass began with a cross-country skiing expedition led by fifth-year Ural Polytechnic Institute student Igor Dyatlov. And he was accompanied by 6 men and 2 women, and they set off on a 300-kilometer trek across the Ural Mountains in late January 1959. And they'd hoped to complete this journey in 16 days. And they had planned to telegram their friend Yuri Yudin, a 10th member of the expedition, who pulled out of the trip due to injuries when they reached the village of Vizai. However, after days passed, this telegram never came, and a search party was launched to look for these 9 cross-country expeditioners. Expeditioners, is that a word? That doesn't feel like a word, does it?
I like it, but yes, I've never used that word before. So.
Explorers. What's the word? Expedition. Expeditioners.
Expeditionists. I don't know. I've never said this before.
There you go. There's a new one for you. A search party was launched on the 20th of February 1959, and eventually investigators discovered the group's tent, which appeared to have been sliced open from the inside. And again, I think we had this point of discussion when we last discussed this. How did they tell that it was cut open from the inside? I'm always a bit confused at that.
Yeah, it must be the direction of the tears on the fabric, the right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That would make sense.
Would you also be able to have I guess maybe a little bit like a bullet wound of the insertion and then the...
Yeah.
Yeah,
how it looks when it's inserted. I don't know if that works with tents. Maybe someone in forensics would be able to say.
But either way, investigators were pretty sure it was cut open from the inside, meaning that for whatever reason they needed to get out in a hurry. They couldn't, for whatever reason, get out the regular exit of the tent. There were footprints leading away from the tent, suggesting the group were either barefoot or wearing socks. These were footprints, like, not just boot prints or anything. They were actually footprints. And then nearby, the bodies of 2 men were found at the base of a pine tree about 1.5 kilometers away. And weirdly enough, they were stripped down to their underwear and lying beside the remains of a small campfire. So, yeah, I mean, that was interesting. It seemed like they had stripped off and tried to make a campfire by the sounds of things.
Yeah, and odd also, thing to do outside in the snow.
Yeah.
In a freezing night as well, wasn't it?
And also damage to the branches of a pine about 5 meters high suggested one of them had tried to climb the tree. Also kind of odd behavior at this point. I don't know if they were trying to...
Yeah.
I don't know what they were trying to do. Exactly. This is part of what makes this case so mysterious. And then later on, three more bodies were found between the tree and the tent, reportedly positioned in a way that suggested they were attempting to return to the campsite. I'm not sure how they would know that, what that position would be.
I guess the direction they were facing, you know, if they fall, if they've landed, if they're face down, then they would have fallen forward.
So if they're all facing the way of the camp, that makes sense. After those 3 bodies were found, it took investigators 2 months to find the remaining 4 bodies. And these bodies, when they found them, were partially dressed. They were found in a ravine 75 meters away from this pine tree. And of these 4, a 20-year-old woman was missing her tongue, and a couple of them were missing their eyes. She and another victim had fractured ribs. 2 had fractured skulls. Yeah. However, apparently foul play wasn't part of what these investigators concluded. They didn't suspect that the group tried to kill each other or anything like that.
Didn't most of them also have weird skin, like burns on their skin?
Yeah, weird things about the bodies. There were also detected small quantities of radiation on some of the bodies
as
well.
Right. Yeah.
And they put that down to perhaps the lanterns that they had with them, right?
Lanterns that they had with them. Yeah. But I mean, all of these kind of things might have simple explanations, but they've prompted numerous kind of conspiracy theories surrounding them. So the radiation was was this part of a nuclear testing facility that they'd stumbled onto, and it was part of a Soviet cover-up that they never revealed what had happened to these people, or was the missing tongue and the missing eyes because they were part of an alien abduction.
Mm-hmm. Or perhaps even a Yeti.
Or a Yeti, yeah. That was all of these have been theorized over the years, among like many other theories as well. So we could go through some of the theories that have been discussed.
Yeah, please do, yeah.
Yeah, aside from those extraordinary theories, there was katabatic winds, which is a type of wind that has been theorized. In 2019, a Swedish-Russian expedition was made to the site to investigate whether this could have been a plausible explanation for the incident. So these are a rare type of wind that are particularly violent, and I think they like it's when winds power like down a mountain. So the wind is at the top of the mountain is much colder because it's much colder air, and so it heads down the mountain and then speeds up as it goes.
And so like an avalanche, but with no snow, just the wind itself.
With wind, yeah.
Okay.
And there were thoughts that this could have made it impossible to remain in the tent because it was just so windy. But also the sound that the wind could have made them go insane or crazy, or just be in tremendous amounts of pain.
Yeah, there's a theory that at least one of them had a bit of an episode, right, and left the tent, meaning that the others had to go after them, hence the lack of footwear and lack of clothing. And then based on that, when they didn't come back, others then followed and it caused a bit of a chain reaction of events.
Yeah. Yeah, so there was a theory that that kind of created what's known as a Kármán vortex street, which is this type of wind pattern that created infrasound capable of inducing panic attacks in humans. And again, this is incredibly rare. But that was another theory, and it could have caused someone to have a panic attack in the middle of the night and suddenly flee, and everyone followed them. And then from there, hypothermia set in. And the weird thing with hypothermia, one of the weird symptoms that could explain the fact that some of them were found partially dressed, is that it makes people feel weirdly hot, even though they're absolutely freezing.
Yeah.
And it also kind of affects your decision-making. It slows down your brain. And sadly, they may have decided to take their clothes off because they were feeling hot, and they clearly weren't in the right frame of mind, and tragically that was the last thing that they needed to be doing at this point in time.
I think up till now there's always been, whichever theory you go with, there's always been little holes and little inconsistencies, and there's several pieces of the jigsaw missing whichever theory you look at.
Yeah,
isn't it? Exactly. It's like, okay, well, they could have had hypothermia, but then why aren't the clothes left strewn around them? You know, how comes there's footprints being left out? How come they didn't take their boots with them and then took the boots off when they felt hot? These little things that just don't necessarily add up, whichever way you look at it, with how they've died, you know, up until potentially now.
Yeah, exactly. We'll come on to the new explanation, but it's actually one of the explanations they'd already had. And like you say, it was fraught with so many kind of unanswered questions that it was kind of one of the less believable ones, I would say, the new theory.
Yeah, I was wondering, in fact, what your two favourite theories are.
I mean, I'm always a fan of the extraordinary ones.
Yeah.
But one of the ones I do like is that this was a military testing facility.
Yeah.
Because I think there were other people that had reported seeing flashing lights in the sky.
Orbs, wasn't it? Orbs around the area.
Yeah. Flashing orbs in the sky, which could be something, you know, extraterrestrial based, or more likely could have been a military testing facility, and they were testing flares or, bombarding the area with sonic blasts or other kind of, you know, testing weapons.
Yeah, that was my favorite theory as well.
It was a Soviet parachute mine exercise was the theory. So they were parachuting these mines into the area, and that kind of the explorers were woken by loud explosions, and in a panic they fled the tent shoeless, and subsequently,
I mean, you would, wouldn't you?
You'd be getting out of there.
It would explain some of the physical injuries that some of them sustained as well, I guess.
The burns
that they had.
I mean, I guess a lot of the injuries they had were consistent with blunt force trauma, weren't they? Especially those who died around the... those the ones who, fell, of course, fell down the ravine are likely to have traumatic injuries. But some of the others who were found to have hypothermia also had quite traumatic injuries that wouldn't necessarily fit with either, say, an animal attacking them, because without their eyes and with missing tongues, an animal attack, but it wouldn't cause that kind of trauma. So again, it was like these inconsistencies that even if, say, the mine one was real and they had these burns, if mines were dropping on you, it would cause, you know, explosive injuries, wouldn't it? You'd have your body parts all strewn all over the place.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be blunt force trauma. And yeah, so whichever way you look at it, there's always these bits and pieces that just don't quite add up.
It's because most of the trauma, let's say the physical damage, was internal as well. Mm-hmm. Apart from the eyes and the tongue, it's all bruises and bones and muscle tearing inside the body. And the skin, if I remember correctly, was mostly unbroken except for these mysterious burns. And so you need to have some kind of violent force taking effect, but that isn't, as you say, an animal attack or a weapon detonation or anything like that, which obviously led some people to think of a non-terrestrial source for the disturbance, particularly in combination with these witnesses who purportedly saw bright lights in the area that they were camped on the night that they were known to be camped there, because they kept a diary, didn't they, where they said on, was it January the 23rd or January 26th, 1959, that they was the last diary entry, so we know that they were there, and witnesses further up the valley.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Said they saw bright lights in that moment. And of course, that kind of, I always like that theory because it fulfills the classic kind of conspiracy theory thinking of, according to the government, there are no records of any military testing in the area at that time. But hey, this is the Soviet Union in 1959, in the Cold War, the height of the Cold War, perhaps. You could argue that 1957 to 1963 period. So, of course, whatever you ask them, they're going to deny. So I always like that because it's the most kind of intriguing. And there's the weapons that you suggested, like you say, Alex, like sonic weapons, parachuting mines that detonate in the air, or whatever the other one was. They're all plausible weapons, and they're all things that we know, you know, America was investigating and is still investigating in some cases around the time. So it's not implausible that technology could be the cause of what happened to them. But now, this new theory suggests otherwise.
Yes. Well, this new theory is actually one of the older theories, and sadly, it's one of the least exciting theories.
But it's often the way.
An avalanche caused this, basically. And this is a new theory that's been put forward in July of last year.
We're in 2021 now.
So there's been new research published in the journal Communications, Earth and Environment, which points to this more sensible explanation of a slab-type avalanche, which is a particular type of avalanche that can occur on quite narrow slopes. Now, the original reason why avalanches were, that theory was kind of discredited, was because the slope that this took place on was typically under the amount... under the angle threshold that an avalanche could realistically occur. I think it was under 30 degrees, the kind of the angle of the slope.
So it was too shallow, basically.
It was too shallow, basically.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
However, in July 2020, they used some software, which actually was the same software used by the Frozen, Disney's Frozen team, to model what could have happened.
Yeah. In fact, didn't they go, it was like a Russian scientist went from there to Disney to say, can I use your
love your
snow software, please?
Did he, I imagine him just at home watching the film with his kid and being like, this is actually really good.
Hang on a second. Wait a second.
I need Walt on the phone. Get me Walt. Walt's dead.
Get me Elsa. So basically what this was is the hikers would have dug a portion of the snow out in order to set up the camp to make like a windbreaker with the hill. And that would have caused the layers of snow underneath. There'll be distinct layers, and one of the under layers would have slid out because of the fact that they dug into this snowy outcrop and caused like blocky chunks of an avalanche to envelop them, like during
the night.
So they
kind of created their own avalanche by digging down into the snow.
I see. Right. Because it was the case, wasn't it, that when they were found, they were found with these blunt force trauma injuries that weren't consistent with an avalanche, because an avalanche usually causes asphyxiation because you're trapped under light amount, well, a lot of snow, but it's kind of, yeah, it's not, as you say, it's not this kind of chunk of ice or sheet that crushes you. It's very much covering you and so you can't breathe.
Right. Yeah, exactly. This would explain why they needed to flee the tent really quickly. Could also explain their physical injuries. Although the weird injuries, not so much, I guess.
Hmm.
Like some of the weird burns. Although maybe that could just be frostbite.
Yeah, that could be exposure to the extreme cold and the sunshine, because they were found a long time later, weren't they?
Yeah, months later. So who knows? The lead investigator in the avalanche simulation laboratory at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology, Johann Gaum, he was the one who had the idea for looking into the frozen simulation technology. He said he was so impressed by the movie's depiction of snow that he asked its creators to share their animation code with him. And so, yeah, using the simulation tool coupled with data from cadaver tests conducted by General Motors in the 1970s, which again is a weird detail I didn't know. General Motors conducted the cadaver tests in the 1970s.
When you donate your body to science, I didn't realize that General Motors might get hold of it and use it.
Yeah. So that, well, this was, so they were just their general research into what happens to a human body when it's struck at different speeds, which makes sense.
Yeah, hard car crashes.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, it's good to know that they've done that research.
So they were using cadaver. So basically, they're using corpses.
Yeah,
strapping them up in your Mondeo, smashing them into walls. I mean, I wonder what kind of test they're actually doing. It just puts a strange image in your head, doesn't it?
How
Motors were using.
How many people generally, when they're donating their body to science?
Yeah.
Does that count? Does General Motors count?
Yeah, weird, isn't it? Maybe it was former employees. You know,
you just have to sign it.
1946, back from the war, getting a job at General Motors. Just like, what's this clause here? And the lawyer's just like, don't look at that.
Do you want a job or not?
Just sign it. 1970s, they retired, they've passed on. The wife is like, where's my husband's body? She's banging at the door of General Motors. Where's my husband's body? And they're like, cast the hag out. Release the pack. Sorry, that got dark. Let's move back to...
To the bright, happy yam of Parsley. Yes.
Back to the other dead bodies.
But it's interesting that to get to the bottom of this mystery, they've really gone to unusual sources. They've used everything.
How do they know about the General Motors thing, for instance?
Exactly.
That's proper research.
Thinking outside the box on this one.
Yeah.
Going for Disney's animation studios and General Motors to solve Dyatlov Pass is strange. But using this data that they got, they concluded that heavy blocks of snow could have landed on the hikers as they slept, and they would have caused the damage that is shown. It is consistent with the injuries that they sustained.
But there's something specific, because we were talking about this before we started recording, and I read the article that you shared with us, Alex, and with the General Motors data in particular, there were two types of main conditions they were testing. It was people wearing seatbelts and people not wearing seatbelts, wasn't it? And they found that the injuries on the bodies in Dyatlov Pass matched the injuries sustained by people wearing seatbelts.
Right.
And the suggestion was that because they were using skis, I think, to trudge through, to trudge on the snow as they were hiking, they may have probably done this thing, the standard practice of putting the skis underneath their bedding.
Sounds incredibly uncomfortable, but yeah.
Yeah, it does. But it provides some kind of basic support for your bedding, which means that when this compacted snow, essentially this block of ice, slid down onto the tent, they would have been caught between a rock and a hard place, almost literally. So they had the force of the ice pushing them into their skis, which they were lying on. yeah. was the suggestion, I think. And that's why it's consistent yeah. with the seatbelt injuries, because these people in a car crash in seatbelts, although the seatbelts stop them flying out of the car, the seatbelts, if they were very tight in particular, would cause these kind of internal injuries because they're just so squeezing them in basically with incredible mm-hmm. force. I think that was the intriguing thing for me out of the General Motors data.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know if they know that for sure. I mean, they found the tent and there are photographs, but there's nothing from the photographs that are available to us, at least, about the conditions of the gear inside the tents. So I don't know how accurate that speculation is about the skis.
You'd also think that, like, if an avalanche fell, I think one of the reasons this was discredited initially is because there was no real evidence that an avalanche had fallen. Mm. Like, the tents were still kind of visible. They weren't buried under all the snow. But I think the suggestion of this type of avalanche is that it would have been weighty blocks of snow. Mm. It wouldn't have been like, you know, lots and lots of powdery snow that would have buried them under meters of it, of the stuff. It would be very compacted blocks. And so maybe that was the explanation. That kind of explains how things were still left unburied.
Yeah, kind of investigators,
when investigators found it. Yeah, I mean, does this really explain why they ran off barefoot? I guess they would have to have left in a hurry.
Mm.
And if people were injured as well, had head wounds, they would want to look after their friends. Yeah. This is what the investigator, Galm, said.
Yeah.
He said, when they decided to go into the forest, they took care of their injured friends. No one was left behind. I think it's a great story of courage and friendship in the face of a brutal force of nature. Yeah. But do you think that this answers all of the questions?
So you're there inside your tent. The ice has fallen down. You hear screaming.
Yep.
You jump out your tent. Don't have much clothes on. You go over there. You go, I can't get you out. There's snow on top of your tent. Grab your knife. Person inside cuts open the tent. You drag them out.
Mm.
You go and try and tend to them outside of the tent, away from the avalanche in the woods.
Yep.
Maybe there's a bit of a blizzard or whatever. Your tent's ruined. Everything's buried, so you don't have your clothes. And then hypothermia sets in. Some people maybe try and go off to try and find help, or at least find, I don't know, some supplies and fall down the ravine. Yeah, I mean, I think quite a few bases are covered by this, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. The weird way in which the people scattered around is still puzzling to me. And I still can't get my head around the time frame they think all of this happened.
The time frame is an issue.
Yeah.
Although it could explain climbing the tree as well, to try and get an advantage point of where the avalanche has come from and the kind of, are everyone's tents buried? Who's still out there? If people are missing, they could be trying to look for people.
Maybe he was after some, like, branches to use as kindling for the campfire that they're making as well.
That's true.
Yeah, it's perhaps, only the higher up bits. I mean, it does definitely explain them wanting to get away. Just imagine the scene. It's pitch black. You've just woken up. You've been rudely woken up by an avalanche hitting you. You are physically injured by this, and you don't know the situation. If you think it is an avalanche, you don't know that it's this particular type of avalanche. You're going to want to try and get away as quick as you can.
Yeah.
In case this happened again.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not thinking rationally. I could see this happening, to be honest.
Yeah, but I would still think, even if you're not fully dressed because you're sleeping, although I'm surprised they weren't sleeping in their clothes anyway, because it must have been freezing. You'd think they would grab enough gear before they rush out of the tent to then not be naked, essentially, when we find their bodies later. Because it wasn't even that they were partially dressed. It's not that none of them had a complete outfit of clothes, did they?
Mm.
Which is what intrigues me. So I think it's very plausible, and your summary is very accurate, but I think Martin might be right in that one of them might have panicked and cut their way out of the tent, and the others rush out after them, which is why none of them have the time to grab enough clothing. And eventually some of them decide to go back when they think it's safe enough to go get more gear. But for whatever reason, they just left it too late and died of cold, I guess, before they made it back to camp. And clearly some of them fell down this ravine. I know there was a suggestion that maybe the ravine was full of... the snow had been so heavy that the edge of the ravine had been hidden by the snow. Yeah. So they didn't. Yeah. They thought the ground was continuing, and then they stepped on snow, which then just collapsed under them, and they died. And they weren't much further ahead than the people around the campfire. So I wonder if they started the fire, and the others thought, "Oh, we'll go off in that direction to see if there's something there," and they all died. I don't know. It doesn't all quite fit to me, but it comes close. It comes very close.
Yeah. I wonder if it's anything that we'll ever know for sure.
I think this gets us a lot closer. Unfortunately, I think it does dispel some of the more outlandish theories a little bit, or at least gives a much more precedence to this one theory. Whereas before, as you say, the avalanche theory definitely had holes in it. Now it seems to be a lot more complete, even if it doesn't explain some of the ways in which the characters involved acted.
Yeah.
I think that's still out there. It's very much the acting irrationally, the taking off of the clothes, the being spread out, the climb of the trees, the burns, those kind of things aren't all accounted for. Mm. But the overall picture from like a macro level, I think, is coming together.
Thing is, I think fear does crazy things to you. And I can imagine, if you're woken up in the middle of the night being pummeled by these heavy blocks of snow, you don't really know what's happening. I could imagine that, going down this way. But yeah, I mean, has it really solved the mystery, or has it just made one of the theories that had already been discredited put it back in play?
As I say, full credit to the researchers behind this for having the imagination to go to General Motors and go to Disney to use their software. And it just shows how amazing technology is and how it can improve everything. Like we mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, that technology to analyze books from 800 to over 1,000 years ago to reveal things that we never thought we could possibly know. And like last year, Alex, you mentioned that someone cracked the code for one of the Zodiac letters as well. It just goes to show that all this stuff that I thought was unsolvable once upon a time can, in time and with imagination, be solved.
And to see the dark side of technology, watch last week's video, AI taking over the world.
Exactly, yeah.
Imagine if AI analyzed the Atlof Pass and then came to the conclusion it was aliens. And everyone's you're like, yes, but I'm a super intelligent AI. I'm more intelligent than all of you, and I think it's aliens. Imagine if AI was actually a QAnon Trump supporter. That'd be the worst thing.
Well, I think someone actually pointed out in the comments last week, or someone mentioned at some point, that Microsoft did that AI test on Twitter, didn't they? Where they put an AI bot on Twitter and let it learn everything it could. Right. For a couple of days, and within 48 hours, awful. It was quoting Hitler.
The results were not good. Didn't they have to shut down the account? Didn't they?
Yeah. Shut it down. Burn the project. Never shut it down again. Oh yeah.
So yeah.
But yeah, what do you guys think at home about the Dyatlov Pass mystery? Do you think that this new update in the story has answered any definitive questions about the case, or do you think this is just something that's always going to remain a mystery? Let us know in the comments below, and let us know as well what your favorite theory is about the case. But with that all said and done, shall we get on to this week's quiz?
Yeah.
Welcome, gentlemen, to this week's quiz, where the pressure is on. You are battling for first place for this week.
It's a privilege. It's a privilege.
Until I get back in the game next week.
Yeah.
But yeah, as always, 10 questions plus a bonus question. And none of this multi-point per question business this week. It's straight down the line.
Alex, one point per question.
As it
you
should
be.
You're
the one who brought this up. You did it first this season.
I will not be having any of this. I don't know what you're talking about. Madness. Okay, let's hear your buzzers. Martin, what have you gone for?
I've gone for my usual.
Where are you? Let's be having you!
Classic Delia Lab.
That's a good one. Yeah.
I've only just watched the whole video of it, and it's really awkward.
It is. Oh, that's the thing. She's in front of a football crowd, and she's just smashed.
It's the, like, it's everyone's initially like, hey, but then she says, let's be having you, and there's just dead silence. It's incredibly awkward. Well worth a watch. And Robin, what have you got?
Well, speaking of awkward things that are well worth watching.
I have no authority here, Jackie Weaver. No authority at all.
Very good.
And it keeps amazing.
Hanford Parish Council.
You have no authority here, Jackie
Weaver.
That was
the video we were referencing earlier. Yeah. Ah,
it's a beautiful thing.
So good.
Jackie Weaver. I get the feeling that people are split on whether Jackie Weaver's in the right or wrong in that video.
I think she's definitely in the right, for sure.
Because she's clearly been called in, like parachuted in because of trouble at the council before.
Yeah. It's not the first time, is it, clearly?
No.
If they've gone mad with power, the tiniest amount of power that you could possibly go mad with. But that's what it seems like to me. Anyway, question number one. Fingers on buzzers. Or don't. I mean, it's your choice. The first successful vaccine was introduced by Edward Jenner in 1796, would you believe it?
Wow.
Which disease did it guard against?
Ooh.
I have no authority here, Jackie Weaver. No authority at all.
Yes, Robin.
Was it smallpox?
It was smallpox.
Well done.
Do you know what? This has been suggested before in comments, but I'm actually going to keep a tally this time so I don't have to be like, how many points is that? So
we have to say with some authority, but how can we trust
Robin
the tally?
One.
Have to make tallies of our own.
Yeah.
That's
all right.
Let's all
Alex.
Keep a tally. Okay. Question number two. That's 1-0 to Robin. In tennis, what piece of fruit is found at the top of the men's Wimbledon trophy?
Oh. Where are you?
That's Martin.
I believe it's a pineapple.
It is a pineapple, yeah. Do you know why it's a pineapple?
Pineapples used to be exotic imports.
Royal, aren't
they?
Yeah. It showed wealth and royalty.
Yeah.
Now they just look silly. A trophy. Yeah. Insane.
But there's loads of stately homes and palaces and things around Europe with pineapples on the top because it was considered a fancy thing to have.
Fair enough. Okay, question number three. What did the Romans call Scotland?
No authority here, Jackie Weaver. No authority at all.
I think Robin just got that.
I'm going to go with Caledonia.
It is Caledonia, yeah. Did you just knew that?
Yes. Knowledge? Well, there was the name of the tribe in central Scotland, the Caledonii, or the Caledonii. Mm. They had two I's at the end, so that's why.
Very
I'm
good.
Sure that
very good.
Yeah, but there are many tribes in Scotland. I think they're just the most prominent ones that the Romans interacted with.
Fair enough. Cool. Well, that's 2-1 to Robin, according to my tally. So let's go on to question number four. In bowling, what is the term given for three consecutive strikes? I think that's Martin. Oh, yep. Martin.
I used to be in the bowling club at university.
Did you?
Oh. Yeah.
But never
knew that. It's called a turkey.
It is a turkey, yes.
Oh, cool. Why?
I wasn't particularly good.
What's your record, Martin? What's your record?
Record? Not great. Not great. I think it's 206.
That's pretty good.
It's okay.
How many strikes is that?
I can't remember how many it was. It was quite a while ago now. It's good, but then there are people who are actually bowlers, you know, in a bowling club, like actually bowled properly.
Wow, okay.
You know, had their own gloves and bowled stuff, and they'd be getting closer to a perfect game. You know, they'd be 270, 280 regularly.
Was it like? Did you guys take it seriously, or was it like a uni club where you just go there?
So,
for drinks?
So I was the social secretary, so I sorted out like the social side of things. Yeah. So I was very much on that side of things as opposed to going and taking it seriously. I think there was a mix, but it was nice just to chill out and hang out with people and just go bowling.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
I want to go bowling. I want to do anything outside of being home.
It's also, it's up north, so everything's, well, bowling's well cheap up north compared to here.
I can imagine. Yeah. Many times I've thought, I'd like to go bowling and not bothered in a couple of years before the pandemic. And now I'm thinking, oh, I wasted all those moments of motivation to go bowling. Yeah,
all those times now, I could have been bowling.
Yeah,
yeah, now you don't want to share a ball and put your hands in the...
Never again.
You're spraying Dettol in there.
Wear someone else's shoes. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, question number 5, that is 2-2. Which country is the origin of the cocktail mojito?
Who?
Which country?
Where does the mojito come from? Mm. I worded that in the weirdest way possible.
Mojito. It sounds exotic, but it probably isn't.
Do you want the mutton?
Mojito. Okay, let's go for Brazil.
It is not Brazil.
Okay.
Dang.
No authority here, Jackie Weaver. No.
Mojito.
I mean, that's a good shout, because it's Spanish. It sounds Spanish. So some Spanish-speaking country. Mm. Mexico?
It is not Mexico. Oh. No.
Okay. Should we have one more guess each and then a clue?
Yeah.
Okay. If we don't get it?
Sure. Okay.
I'm gonna go for the United States. I reckon it's someone in the United States.
It is not the United States, I'm afraid.
Because it sounds exotic, so they pick the name, even if it's
here.
I've no authority here, Jackie Weaver. No.
Go on then, Robin.
Mojito. I don't actually know what it means, but I assumed it meant mosquito. So could it be somewhere that has mosquitoes? There are mosquitoes in Africa.
That's
a continent. Yeah, okay. What Spanish-speaking countries? Is Ecuador?
I actually don't know what
I'm not sure.
Ecuador's in South America, so... Oh, sod it. Spain.
It is not Spain, I'm afraid. Do you want a clue?
Yeah, I think we better have one.
The place where this comes from is known for their... very fancy cars.
This is a meeting called by two hands.
I think I heard Delia first.
Fancy cars. Okay, I'm going to go for Italy.
It is not Italy.
What?
There are several places known for their cars.
Yeah, I was thinking Ferrari.
Yeah. I mean, now that you said it, I don't know. That was my guess. where else does fancy cars?
May need a better.
Fancy cars? Clue.
Fancy.
Mercedes, Ferrari. What are fancy cars?
If you have a guess, I'll reiterate that clue. Or rephrase that clue.
Okay. Monaco.
It's not Monaco, no.
Okay.
So
good guess then.
Thanks. It is a good guess. Fancy is probably the wrong word. What I mean is
why'd you say it then?
Well,
what are you talking about?
I think they've got a lot of old school cars there because of import problems. And
I don't know what that means.
You're talking about Cuba.
It is Cuba.
Cuba mojito. Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad that the clue was okay in the end. That did the job.
Vintage cars.
Vintage cars. Yeah, that's the word. Damn it. Okay, cool. So that is 3-2 to Martin as we go on to question 6.
Whoa.
You're clued up on your friend's knowledge, I'm presuming.
I've really not seen much Friends at all.
Here we
never
go.
Watched it.
You've never watched it? Okay. I'm on a slight advantage.
This will be fun.
I've watched like half a dozen episodes. No, I've seen a bit, but years ago.
Okay. Question number 6. The 6 main stars of Friends appeared in all 236 episodes. Who is the next most regular character to appear on the show?
200 episodes? Oh. No, I don't. Do we have to know names?
Considering that neither of you know much about Friends, I'll accept a description.
Okay, can I go for a description?
Go for it.
The bloke serving in the cafe behind the bar.
It is Gunther. Well done. Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'll accept
Gunther.
That was a good guess.
He's like got blonde hair, right?
Yep. He featured in 151 of the 236 episodes. Wow. Apparently he started.
They're always in there. That's the thing.
He started as an extra, apparently, and he was just an extra in the background, and the reason why he got the job as the coffee shop manager was
Central
because
perk.
Because he actually just knew how to run a make a coffee, use a coffee machine.
all those years working minimum wage paid off.
151 That's... episodes later, and I think he still gets syndication rights from.
And
the
he must
show
have been
well.
Paid pretty well as well.
Wow,
for a couple of lines an episode. That's pretty great. Yeah,
as time went on as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. It pays. That's it pays cool. to be an extra sometimes. Okay, question number 7.
Well, what's that score then? Is it 4-2 to Martin?
It is 4-2 to Martin.
Oh, I know. I think he's got it.
I don't know.
Yeah.
There's plenty of questions left.
Plenty of questions come back from.
Not catching up.
Oh. Question number 7. Which singer has the most UK number one singles of all time?
Singer.
UK number one singles.
UK number one singles.
Singer.
That would have to be Elton John.
It is not Elton John.
That was going to be my guess. So it's not Elton John.
Illegally?
Yes, Robin.
Is it Cliff Richard?
It's not Cliff Richard.
It's not Cliff.
No.
Not Cliff.
And is it a singer who's like, it's singer. Not, it's not someone who was in a band and then not in a band? Is it? Is that a thing?
He's a singer.
That doesn't
help. I was a singer.
Okay.
Where are you?
Yes, Martin.
Michael Jackson.
It's not Michael Jackson.
Good.
Now elect a chairman. No, they can't because the vice chair's here. I take charge.
Gradually going for the legendary clip.
Yeah.
Elvis Presley.
Ooh, it is Elvis guess. Presley.
Well done.
Yes. Well done.
Yeah, great guess.
Yeah.
Nice.
The king of rock and roll with 21, I believe.
That's
UK
mad.
Number one
king
singles.
Of the UK charts.
That's mad.
Yeah.
Including
I was
some
surprised by that
ones,
one.
Right?
Yeah. It's not who you it's not who you would think.
No.
I don't know.
You think
I was thinking it might be someone British.
We both went for Elton John first and then I thought, oh, Cliff Richard, yeah. But
there you go.
Cool.
Okay, question number 8, and it's a true or false. So depending on how you want to play it, you might want to be quick on the buzzer. True or false, the Channel Tunnel is the longest rail tunnel in the world.
Oh, no.
Oh.
I've no authority here, Jackie Weaver. No authority at all.
Yes, Robin.
Take a punt and say false.
Do I answer now too?
This was I was going to say, that's how we normally do these, so I'll accept. Yeah, go on.
Channel
you,
Tunnel
you
is the longest in the world, a rail, underwater rail tunnel.
I think it's just longest rail tunnel in the world.
Surely not.
So tunnel. So it has to be tunnel, whether it's underwater or
rail
not.
Tunnel. I can't think of any. Is there one going under the Alps?
You cannot ask me questions.
No. I'm asking questions to myself. Longest rail tunnel. I'm going false as well. I don't think that's true.
Wait a minute, what?
Yeah, so I guess that's how we do things for the true or false. Is that right? Does that seem fair to you, Robert?
Well, you're the quizmaster.
I can go true if you want.
No. Go for it. We've never had this scenario before, I don't think. So I'm curious
to see
how Alex...
gone for the same answer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't feel right to me, but we've set a precedent that I can't go back from. So I'm going to accept that answer. And yes, it is false.
Oh, wow.
So you both get a point in this crazy, crazy world.
Crazy quiz. Oh, still a point ahead, Martin. Damn you.
So it is 5-4.
Stop.
But yeah. So the longest tunnel is the Gotthard Base Tunnel in Switzerland, which is 4 miles longer at 35.5 miles.
Does it go under the Alps?
I would assume so.
All right. There we go.
Yeah. Cool. But that's crazy, isn't it? It's crazy to think that we've dug 35 miles underground. I don't know why that...
Underwater.
Underwater as well.
Yeah.
The pressure
of
the water. Not the people building it.
It's under so much pressure. Okay, question number 9. 5-4 to Martin. If something is squamous or squamous, what is it covered in?
Oh.
That's...
What?
That's S-Q-U-A-M-O-U-S. What is it covered in?
Okay.
That's the Avenue!
Yes,
it's
Martin.
Covered in. It's covered in like a mucus.
It is not covered in mucus, no.
It's worth a guess. That boy was very squamous after everyone spat on him.
I've never come across squamous.
Squamous.
Squaw. What's a squaw?
Ooh.
Or a squam? Or a squam?
Squibbity-squam.
What could this be? Famous.
Ooh.
Squamous.
Something like
Covered in squares.
Is that your guess?
Covered in squares. That is my guess.
It is not squares.
Should we go for another one? What do you reckon? Squamous.
Do you want another guess or would you like a clue?
I mean, I'm clueless, so yeah.
Maybe a clue might help with this one.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if this will make sense. Okay, I'll go for this. It's a name, a type of armor as well.
Oh.
Oh.
I think that was...
There's Robin who just made it there first.
I think that was Robin.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Scale armor is a thing.
It is scales. Yes. Scales.
Oh, cool.
Squamous.
I'm glad that worked. Yeah. Scales. Yes.
Wow. That's a new word.
And I'm glad you got the point, Robin, because now
it's 5 points.
It's really tight now.
Five all as we go on to question 10. Oh,
there we go.
This may be a fingers on buzzers. I don't know.
Possibly.
Cool. Okay.
Question 10. Geocentrism is the belief that which planet is the center of the universe?
Called by two counselors.
Martin, I think Robin got there.
Sorry.
Yeah, go on.
Is it the ninth planet from the... No. Is it Earth?
Who said it?
It is Earth, yes.
Sorry, Martin. Sorry. No, I feel like I stole it's that. That's not,
No, it's how it works.
You brought
first.
It back in a very fair way, I'd say. That's how I run these quizzes, Robin.
Very fairly.
In a very fair way.
It was.
Yes. Well, I think I found that one. Was 6-5 to Robin. Good job.
Did we have two points for one of the questions?
For the false, the true or false, we both false. Got one.
Good point. Yeah.
Not necessarily happy with that ruling, but hey, I mean, only history will judge.
Very good.
Yeah. Okay. Would you like the bonus question?
Yeah.
Better had.
It's like the Wales-Scotland game, Martin, all over again.
Thought I'd throw this one in. Okay. What's the name of the large street racing event in The Fast and the Furious that the gang take part in?
Illegally?
That should be
Illegally.
Sorry, I burst too soon. It's something wars.
You take your time because I do not know. I haven't seen it.
Is it Race Wars? Race Wars?
It is Race Wars, which is an unfortunate name for the event, but
actually, yes.
Race Wars.
I never thought of that. They go there several times in the movies.
Only in 2001.
Yeah. Cheers to that.
And don't they go there in the seventh film as well? It like starts with Race Wars, doesn't it?
They go there several times, they go there when Letty has amnesia and he's trying to jog her memory.
Talking of Fast and Furious, you're going to be playing Fast and Furious at some point, right?
Well, I wanted to bring this up. I sneakily put it in as the last
nice
bonus
segue
question.
There.
Good.
Because, we have been requested by literally handfuls of people.
handful of people.
One handful of people to stream some Fast and Furious content. So we have a Twitch page set up, indeed. And we're going to try to attempt it on Thursday the what's the date? Thursday the 18th of February.
Uh-huh.
So come along and join us on Twitch live, where we'll be streaming some of the Fast and Furious video game. And it's going to be chaotic and an absolute mess. So
I imagine it'll be mid to late evening here, won't it?
Yeah. We haven't set a time, but probably like 7 p.m. Yeah. GMT.
And the beauty of this is, Alex is not only a pro gamer, but he is also the world's biggest Fast and Furious fan. Martin, I think, has not seen a thing about Fast and Furious. So here
I've seen. I've seen number two.
Okay, seen number two.
I saw number two in like what year did it come out?
2003, I think.
I don't know. Like yeah. I don't know the dates.
I saw it like early noughties, really.
So Martin knows his Fast and Furious knowledge is limited, shall we say? So this will be fascinating.
I don't know
see.
Any of their names.
Fascinating to see how this plays out, and I'll be there trying to fit this video game into the mythology, the grand saga of Fast and Furious.
Yes, yeah, so we'll be there as a game. Alex will be taking control.
Oh yeah.
It's only a single player game. It's a single player, I think. Anyway,
yeah. Single player game, but a family experience.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. There's nothing better than, you know, watching a friend play a game. You know, it's a good thing to do. So come along and watch as well.
But also, you know, it could be a good Q&A opportunity if you had any questions for us or just wanted to hang out.
Yeah, but they have to be Fast and Furious related.
If it's not Fast and Furious related, I'm going to kick you out.
Get out. You'll be kicked. Yeah.
This is assuming we can get it to work and all the audio works and okay, yeah, which... true. It's about 50-50 chance. So come along. It'll be chaotic. But thank you so much, guys, for indulging me in this discussion this week.
Thank you for leading it.
No problem at all. And I hope you both have lovely weeks. And thank you again so much for watching, everyone at home, or listening. And we will see you next week.
Yes.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.